This is Papa Hale speaking, and you are listening to a Wrestling with Words podcast. Visit us at WrestlingWithWords.com and follow us on Twitter at WrestleWords. If you don't, you are not Papa Hale's approved. But remember to always be fired up!
Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the Wrestling with Words Audio Network. I am Patrick and he is Danny, and we're about to talk some wrestling.
Yeah!
Danny, Monday night, the Beast and the Destroyer went toe-to-toe.
They did. The most important thing that I noticed, it was actually pointed out to me by Jim Ross on Twitter. Samoa Joe actually blocked and stuffed a Brock Lesnar double leg takedown. Like, that was early on when they started grappling. Brock Lesnar went for the takedown. Joe wasn't having it, and then Brock pushed him back into the corner. Now, that is huge leading into their fight, because that's pretty much one of Brock's big weapons, to take his opponent down and mount them and just ground and pound him out. Look on a bear hug from the ground, look to lock on the Kimura, arm lock. I mean, that's a major strong point in his ground game offense. But the thing is, I mean, Samoa Joe, as much as anything, has trained in mixed martial arts for many, many years. So I think that's absolutely going to play into his strengths. I think he's going to be bringing an MMA defense that Brock may not have seen yet in the WWE.
Yeah, definitely. Totally. Somewhat of an equal, if you could say that.
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, I think he's, I don't know if he's equal, but he knows that style of fighting enough to where he can possibly defend it a bit more than most guys can. But it was rough. I mean, they brought out, you know, referees. The referees couldn't stop him. They started bringing out guys from the locker room. They still had trouble kind of keeping him apart. So it's just, if that's kind of any indication of the match, I think we're in for something fun. We're in for a lot of fun.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of that was when Samoa Joe went and super kicked Lesnar, and down not only went Lesnar, but also half of the roster.
Yeah, like Brock was trying to hold on to them, and he just took them down with him. It was rough. It was a fight, and I think that's exciting, because I hope that's what most of the people want to see. They want to see these guys just get in there and beat the tar out of each other.
I think they were set up perfectly. They basically confronted each other. They got physical, and then they got to pull apart. You know, just like Lesnar and Undertaker did.
It gives you just enough to get you excited about it, and keep you wanting more.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I mean, yes, last week I was already excited about it. Once Heyman came out, caught an amazing promo, and then got choked out by Samoa Joe. But then Lesnar comes in, and now he, you know, is confronting Samoa Joe, and Samoa Joe's not backing down. He's basically Beast versus Destroyer. I can't wait till July.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. I mean, the matches, if you know, like I said, if this kind of brawl here is any indication of what we're in for, I think we're all in for something exciting.
And not only that, but it is actually a threat, not somebody that people can be like, oh, this is somebody who Lesnar will easily beat.
Yeah, that's true too.
With the expertise and the knowledge that Samoa Joe has with, you know, mixed martial arts, it's just another layer. Samoa Joe, another guy who can do suplexes and who can do submissions.
Yeah, I mean, that's strikes, submissions, and suplexes. That's Samoa Joe right there. So, I mean, I think I don't know if they're evenly matched, but I I think they're definitely coming with similar game plans. So in theory, if they're coming with similar game plans, they know how to potentially defend against each other's game plans as well. I think that'll be something we see as possible big thing is if they're coming at each other with the same game plans, do they adequately know how to defend that same game plan?
Oh yeah, definitely. So it's just gonna be the continued buildup. You know, we have what, less than 4 weeks before they face each other. So I'm assuming that they'll confront one another one more time. Maybe a contract signing.
Somebody goes through a table.
At least they'll destroy a table.
The Pier 6 brawl, yeah.
So definitely excited about this main event for Great Balls of Fire on July the 9th.
On the WWE Network.
For only $9.99.
Yeah. They did not jump their price up to $30. That is a vicious rumor.
So Danny, let's go over to SmackDown now. Because they're actually having a pay-per-view this month. Money in the Bank. Now, we've talked about the Money in the Bank matches with, you know, The Miz, Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm sticking with Kevin Owens as my pick to win the Money in the Bank ladder match.
I have to stick with Sami Zayn. I think that he's just... not that he necessarily has money in the a whole lot of ladder match experience, but I think he has enough, and I think he has enough heart to carry him through the kind of pain that the ladder matches can bring, and still come back and try to persevere and hopefully get the win.
Yeah. Now, do you think there's even a chance Nakamura wins this?
I think for now he's better off not having it, because I think that would. Sometimes what happens if you push a guy up to the top too quickly, he only has one place to go. You know, if they're not going to give him the belt, or they're going to wait, you know, or even if he does win the belt, like if he wins it very quickly and then he loses it and they say, oh, well, maybe he wasn't ready for the big time. You know, he wasn't ready to be a guy to carry the team. They're going to make him, you know, they would make him wait on that, and they would, you kind of got to, then the only way is down.
Now, a match related to this is the WWE Championship match. Jinder Mahal will be defending his belt against Randy Orton. Of course, the winner of the Money in the Bank ladder match will have the right to challenge possibly one of these two guys.
And I think I have to give it to Jinder, because he's going to have the Singh brothers there in his pocket still. Unless Randy can do something to neutralize the Singh brothers. I think Randy's going to be facing that uphill battle, like he did before, of 3-on-1. And we saw that didn't work out well for him. You know, with the distractions from the Singh brothers and stuff, Jinder was able to capitalize and get the win. I think unless either Randy can do something or management does something to help kind of neutralize that, the outside interference, I think we're going to see the same result.
I agree. I don't think it's time to hinder Jinder.
No, absolutely not.
Jinder's on a roll. He's selling merch.
Yeah, he's selling merch. And, I mean, it's still generating interest. It's still adding an air of unpredictability to people. And as I was listening to somebody else talk about it. It was one of the after show on Monday after Raw, where they were talking. Corey Graves and JBL and stuff were talking about how Jinder carries himself like a champion. You know, everybody was like, "Oh, is this guy like he won the belt, but is he ready to be like, you know, the top guy, or did he just kind of get lucky?" But he carries himself like a champion. He dresses nice. He's got the Singh brothers. He has the big processional, the white limousine. You know, he's showing that that he's taking pride in being the champion, and he looks like somebody you would want leading your company.
You just want to continue to, you know, ride on the Jinder Mahal roller coaster.
the Maharaj Monorail. I tried to think of alliteration. I don't know if that worked too well. The Maharaj Monorail.
That sounds good enough to me.
We need to trademark that before WWE starts making shirts.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna do that.
Shucks.
That's outside the FOW budget.
Yeah, that's true.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
About you know, I think that we would go through probably 500% of the budget.
Yeah, just to trademark something that may never be used. Yeah. And who knows, there might be a real Maharaja out there who already has that trademarked anyways.
Yeah, I'd rather get the Danny Danger Express shirt.
I don't want an express. I'm not going around anywhere. I'm not hopping on the Lex Express, man. We're not making the new Lex Express here, Danny Danger. You know, that just ain't how it is. Danny Danger rides solo, man. He doesn't drag a whole bus or train full of people behind him.
Yeah, but you do want a chance to go around, you know, town by town, kissing babies.
Shaking babies, kissing hands, that kind of thing.
That shaking hands, kissing babies, Danny.
Trust me, the other way is a whole lot more fun.
If you say so. All right, so Danny, the tag team championships are in the line. The Usos defend against the New Day.
The returning New Day, which seemed to kind of take a leave of absence for a little while. They're back, showing us, you know, why they held those championships, why they held tag team championships for so long. You know, I mean, you can even put aside all the silly antics with the trombones and the horns and all that stuff. And, I mean, they're three very, exceptional athletes. And I mean, if the Usos haven't done a lot of their homework trying to do what they can to research the New Day, I think they're going to end up losing those championships. It seems that for the last couple of years, the whole tag team division has been dominated by the New Day.
So you like the New Day on here? Because I sure do.
Yeah, I think they're kind of the, it almost seems like they're the easy favorite.
Yeah, I definitely don't see why you wouldn't do that. I think with the Usos, if you look at what they've done, they can only beat the same team so many times. With the New Day, you have a lot of fresh matchups.
Yeah, because the New Day, yeah, and I think that was the point of keeping the New Day away from TV for a while. Let some new teams get in there.
So with that, the New Day champions, I like it. And now we move on to the women's championship match, Naomi versus Lana. Did you see that pop Lana got? They like her.
Well, they like her because she's attractive. It has nothing to do with her perceived wrestling ability. We've never seen her wrestle on the main roster. She's had a handful of matches on the Florida touring circuit of NXT, you know, which is like NXT B team. But I don't know if I think Naomi's going to have to end up carrying most of the workload in that match. I'm not really looking forward to that match. I hope Naomi retains it. Even though the fans like Lana, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to like seeing her compete in matches. They probably would assume just as much rather watch her come out and talk and dance around and stuff.
So who do you like here?
I'm hoping Naomi. I really am. She's a proven competitor. You know, I mean, she started as a dancer as well, but she's been quite a few years as a competitor. And I hope they can that she can continue to show that she's a top athletic female in WWE.
Well, I'm going with Lana.
Oh, you would, wouldn't you?
I think right now they're going to go with the hot hand. And here's my reasoning behind it. And this is going to go along with the next Money in the Bank ladder match. I think that she is going to win but then I think that she is going to get the title cashed in on that night.
So you think somebody's going to cash in on her that night, like somebody, Carmella, maybe cash in on her, or anybody cash in on her and try to take it from her?
I predict Lana will win the championship, and the winner of the women's Money in the Bank ladder match will not only cash in, but actually win the belt.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that brings us to who do you think is going to win the Money in the Bank? Who do you think is going to essentially leave as champion at the end of the show?
Charlotte.
You think Charlotte's going to win the Money in the Bank, cash in on Lana, and you think that's the way it's going to go?
I think that's the best scenario.
Well, I personally don't like either of them, so I hope that neither of them win their respective matches. But, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, even if it's terrible.
Well, we're not going to judge you for that, Danny.
Okay, well, that's awful nice of you.
So who do you like here at the Money in the Bank ladder match?
Come on, man. It's a straight fire. Come on. It's Becky Lynch. Always.
You going with the Irish, huh?
I gotta go with my fellow ginger. I legally and contractually, by blood, I'm not allowed to bet against fellow gingers in big matchups. That's just it. I mean, it's in the Geneva Convention. Can't do much about it.
Well, we wouldn't want you to violate laws and agreements that have been bled over for generations.
That's it. I mean, you know, that's it. Like you said, they've bled over them for generations.
We don't want your forefathers to look down on you in disgrace for shaming them after all they did for you to protect the gingers.
That's it. Yeah. So I that's it. You said it as best as anybody, sir.
All right, so that's Money in the Bank, 1 to 10. How do you think this will do?
I think it'll be fairly exciting. I think, you know, the ladder matches, even if they're kind of train wreckish, I think they still provide a good entertainment for most people. So I think the pay per view is going to do all right, and I think the show is going to be fairly well received as well.
Are you a big fan of the Money in the Bank concept?
Yeah, I like it because it adds a mystery and an intrigue to the championship picture. Because you never know, you know, could they cash in? And it for a little while there, you know, it was the first several years, it was pretty much it was a guaranteed win when somebody cashed in. But they've kind of taken it to the next step over the last, you know, since then, and made it to where you've had people cash in and not win the championship, you know? Something happens. The champion kind of finagles them, or you know, some people just weren't up to the task of winning the match. And so I think that adds a new element to it too. No matter if you try to use the element of surprise, there's no guarantee that it'll play in your favor.
Yeah, it's definitely to me a really fun concept, and not only the match itself, but then again, what happens afterwards, and is he or she gonna cash in at this time, or is he or she gonna cash it at that time? Are we gonna expect it? Are we gonna not expect it? So it's always fun for me. I love it. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think that I'm gonna give it a solid 7.
Okay, I think that's a pretty safe bet. I think I'll take your 7 and ride with it.
Let's move on to our home state here in Atlanta, Georgia. Danny, we saw each other for 2 days in a row for the AWE Tag Team Tournament at the Southern Fried Game Room Expo.
That we did. 2 days in a row, and a glorious 2 days it was. Played some games. We saw some good wrestling.
We see a lot of great wrestling.
A very entertaining and violent Roar women's match. Headlined night 2. Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on what kind of children you want to, what kind of adults you want them to grow up into. But yeah, may not have been best for all children involved. But AWE isn't always best for all children involved. It's not always best for all adults involved. It is a very special kind of product.
So the Kraken are victorious, Danny.
Yes. Who originally weren't even announced as the team. It was going to be Murder One and Jimmy Rave. And then they decided to submit the Kraken instead of, what were they calling themselves? The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost?
Yeah. You know something, Danny? They continue to call them the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Why can't they just call them the Trinity? It's so much shorter.
There might already be a team named the Trinity or something. I don't know.
Really, Danny? Is that what you're going with?
I don't know. Or maybe they just like being complicated. It's the hierarchy. They all like having 17 nicknames, you know?
This is true.
That may be part of the thing. They want, instead of saying that, yes, we're the Holy Trinity, you know, or the Trinity of Southern wrestling or whatever, they want to come out and say, Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Well, to each their own. So, Danny, if we first predicted that the Carnies would be the winners.
Yes.
Then we found out, you know, breaking kayfabe, they were booked elsewhere on Saturday.
Yes.
So we knew there was no way they were winning.
Yes.
So we went ahead and made a different prediction. We both predicted the Dark City Fight Club to win.
Yeah.
And they don't show up.
And the Dark City Fight Club don't show up.
Screwed our predictions.
Screwed them up all the heck, yeah. Yeah. Yes, our predictions got shot in the foot on both occasions. But, you know, I mean, what can you do? What can you do?
Well, what we can do is we can now try to figure out what's going to happen next.
With the tag team championships, yeah.
The Kraken get a shot at the titles now. But here's the thing. All right, we have Murder One, who's main eventing the July 9th show against Homicide. Chip Day is putting up his number one contendership against Aaron Epic.
Should
Chip win and beat Epic, he gets his title shot at the second half of the season finale, which means most likely they're not going to challenge for the titles until the next season starts. So here's what's going to either happen in my head. I'm thinking the second part of the season finale.
Okay.
The Devil's Rejects either should defend the titles against the Carnies.
Okay.
All right. It's the only obvious thing.
Okay. Since they're technically owed a rematch.
We know the Tank is retiring at the Scenic City Invitational August 4th and 5th.
And Iceberg has pretty much said he's not, I mean, this is, I don't know if he's going to finish out 2017 or not. I mean, he said it's coming soon.
Right. But for this point, the time is limited on the champions.
Yeah.
So no match has been announced.
Yeah. Well, it's possible that that the champions maybe defend the belt once. And then Tank retires, and they end up having to vacate the championship. I mean, that's an extreme possibility. And then we have maybe the Kraken versus another top contender, be it possibly the Carnies, if they haven't taken their shot yet, or somebody else, to crown new champions.
Yeah, well, I was going to say is, will the Devil's Rejects retire as champions?
It's a possibility. It really is. I mean, is, you know, like we said, they're not young men anymore. But as they showed against the Carnies, they are still a very formidable team. They still are very vicious, very strong. You know, they can take a lot of punishment and they can dish a whole lot out. So we can't discount the fact that even if they defend the belts a couple more times before August, they may not lose them.
We could potentially, in any of these scenarios, we could potentially see another matchup between the Carnies and the Kraken.
Yeah. Well, with any of those scenarios, yeah, whether the Devil's Rejects lose the championships to possibly the Carnies, then the Kraken takes their rematch or their match for winning the Bobby and Stan tournament, or it goes to some kind of vacated title situation where possibly we see the Carnies versus the Kraken then.
So what option do you like the best here? What would Danny like to see?
I don't want to see the Kraken versus the Carnies again. But it seems that both roads are leading to that. To me, it still just seems like, you know, these guys fought at the end of, you know, in December, and it was supposed to be kind of a, they weren't going to fight for a while. And it's, I mean, I guess at this point, it's difficult to keep them apart, not only because of the hatred, but also because they're essentially the top two teams in Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment and arguably the Southeast. So their paths are going to cross a lot. You know, I want the Carnies to take it. You know, the Kraken did win. They're getting back into their winning ways after both men individually and as a team had been on a losing streak. You know, they ended up winning multiple matches over the span of two nights, three matches, but even more pinfalls because several of the matches were elimination style. But I still want to see the Carnies become the champions again. You know, I think that they kind of admitted that they might have taken the Devil's Rejects a little lightly because of the respect they have for them, because, you know, they were kind of in awe of battling one of their heroes. So if the Carnies can kind of realign themselves to the darker side, the thing that made them more so successful in AWE, especially against the Hierarchy, I think we can see the Carnies as champions again.
100%. I definitely think the Carnies did a great job as champions. I think they could have a much longer run. But we definitely are going to see the tag team division continue to get built up. As AW announced, both the Dynasty Boys and the Ugly Ducklings will be coming back.
Although they hasn't been officially announced, I'd say it's a pretty safe bet that the IndyCard Mafia might be coming back as well, as they were the ones who, you know, eliminated the Carnies. And then the very next night, they were mocking the Carnies when the Carnies weren't there. They were trying to throw up the 666, and they did a couple of the Carnies signature maneuvers. It appears that they want the Carnies again. And if the fans ask for it, I think AW management is going to deliver. So that's possible to see the IndyCard Mafia back sooner rather than later.
I also think we will definitely see the Submission Squad back again.
Yes, absolutely. They did look very, very good.
Heisenberg Brothers as well.
I mean, I guess. I mean, we can't seem to get rid of them if we tried. So, yeah, they'll probably be back.
Hey, if I have to put up with S4, you have to put up with the Heisenberg Brothers.
But you don't even like the Heisenbergs, though.
Who says I do not like the Heisenbergs?
Give me one good reason why you do like them.
They're a good jobber team.
They're shorter than you, so you want to see them again?
They are not shorter than me. Nobody's shorter than me.
That's true. There's very, very few people on the face of this earth who are shorter than you. Especially because you sit down at most of the shows.
Probably just the Oompa Loompas and that little guy from the Austin Power movies.
Yeah, he's probably shorter than you. Not by much, but he probably is, yeah.
So the tag team division in AEW is definitely quite... interesting. We definitely got to see a lot of different teams come in, which was fresh.
Yeah, a lot of teams we hadn't seen, teams we hadn't seen in some time.
It was great to see the Besties in the World, as they have been making towns all over the United States.
Yeah, because that was our... I mean, we've seen Davey Vega Cup on two different instances, but we hadn't seen the team. Similar to... with Gary J, you know, Gary J's been a long time part of AWE. We had only seen Evan Holistico twice, and this time teaming with Gary, and of course they looked very impressive. You know, taking it to the finals. You know, so I mean, we did see some new teams, some new variations on teams, and then some that, you know, we hadn't even seen before in AW. The Jim Nasty Boys, you know, we've seen Timmy Lou Retton a few times, but this was White Mike's first time in front of the AWE crowd, and to say the least, I'd say they made a pretty strong impression, as they're already announced as being able to come back.
Dude, I am so happy how White Mike was over and how people actually knew his chant.
Yeah.
The AWE crowds, they're smart crowds, but sometimes they can be a little bit close-minded when it comes
to
the
outside. They can be hostile towards new people sometimes. Let's say that.
Yes. But, man, they love White Mike.
I think White Mike's right up the alley of Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. You know, he's basically like a southern version. Basically, if you took Joey Ryan and Dalton Castle and kind of mixed them in there together and added a dash of a southern swagger, I think you pretty much have my White Mike. And all those elements are you know, loved by the AWE crowd.
All right, so let's go ahead and move over to Japan, where we just got a match which is yet to be rated, but who knows? Could it be the first ever 7-star match?
I think Metzer's probably somewhere in the basement just watching it over on repeat, like just screaming like a little girl at how much he enjoys it the whole time. He hasn't even had time to take his eyes off the match and rate it yet.
Well, Kushida Okada defended his IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Kenny Omega, and they went to a 60-minute draw.
Yeah, that's quite a rarity in major wrestling promotions to go 60 minutes. It's quite a rarity in Japan. But I mean, these guys did it, and it was exciting, start to finish. I mean, these guys, they showed absolutely why they should have been the main event of that show and why they could arguably main event every show, you know, for the rest of the year and possibly years to come, showing that they're definitely two of the best. Kenny Omega proving again that he's definitely a guy who could belong at the top. You know, everybody thought, oh, well, is he ready? And then he had the great match with Okada, and everybody says he's ready. But sometimes it's not your chance, you know, the big single one that lets people know you're ready, but it's multiple strong matchups. And going to a fantastically exciting 1-hour draw, which sometimes it's hard to do. Sometimes in 1-hour draws, there's a lot of lulls and a lot of slow movement parts and all this, but this match didn't seem to really have that. Both guys went out there pretty much running full speed the whole time. It was fantastic. It really, really was. And, you know, I'm just kind of wondering where the story goes from here. Was that pretty much Kenny Omega's shot? He had his shot, he didn't win, and that's it. Now he's got to work his way towards the title shot. Or do they say, well, hey, you know, you guys went to a draw. Technically, nobody won. We need to see it again. You know, maybe we see it again sooner rather than later. Maybe they decide to make us wait till Wrestle Kingdom before we get these two fighting again.
Yeah, I love the match. Of course, I was up for the show live in the middle of the night while everyone was sleeping.
Yeah, except the Japanese fans who were on their feet for an hour.
So to me, it's just like, okay, one thing is we are used to Iron Man matches, but here we didn't know we were going to get the hour.
Yeah.
And they still went the hour, and like you said, full speed. There were no real downtimes other than, you know, when they crashed and burned.
Yeah.
You know, only when they were running out of gas because they had giving their all. It's not like they were just doing rest holds.
That's different. When they crash and burn, when they're exhausted, that's different than just, we're doing rest holds 15 minutes into the match because we're trying to pace ourselves, you know, which I've seen in a lot of matches that go the 1 hour time limit or Ironman matches. There's multiple extended stretches where they're kind of trading chin locks or doing a lot of slow groundwork because they're trying to conserve their energy for the end of the match. But like you said, I think it helped in an Ironman match, you know, you're going an hour. So you want to sometimes try to find ways to conserve your energy. Where here it was still sudden death. One pinfall would end the match. So the entire time they're going in the high gear because they're trying to win the match and get it over with and get done and get back to the locker room with the belt in their possession.
And I really love the story. You know, we had coming in from Wrestle Kingdom was the fact that Omega could not hit the one-winged angel on Okada. He finally did it here, and what it should have been a pinfall, you know, it wasn't because Okada put his foot on the rope.
It was placement by Okada. He kind of, I guess it in a sense, he knew, he saw the move coming, and he thought it's easier to position my body once I've taken the move than it is to continue to defend it. So he took the move. I mean, it's a devastating maneuver. It really is. And yes, Okada was able to get himself on the rope to break the count and then kind of be able to take a breather after that for a little bit to try to regain some composure, as opposed to if he had just slipped out of the move or tried to counter it, and then wouldn't have been able to get that rest period. He would have still been having to fight and try to counter moves of his own before he would get a rest. So I mean, sometimes you have to allow yourself to take a shot or two in order to kind of work as a strategy, you know. But I mean, that had to have been the most amazing near fall of the entire match. Like you said, he tried it and tried it and tried it, and he couldn't get it in their first match. He tried it and tried it and tried it and finally got it. Everybody's like, this is the moment Kenny Omega wins the belt. But the crafty veteran that Okada is knew where he was in the ring and was able to take advantage of that.
And then many Rainmakers later,
he couldn't get Kenny to stay down. That was the thing. He would hit the Rainmaker and he wouldn't be able to dive on top and go for the quick pinfall. There would usually kind of breaks in there. And that extra time that it was taking him to get to the pinfalls allowed Omega enough time to be able to dig deep and kick up. It just, I mean, so many fantastic moments, just so much great strategy between the two guys, storytelling. I mean, top caliber work by top caliber performers.
Absolutely. And of course, the end came when, you know, after another Rainmaker, Okada could not get to Kenny in time for the pinfall. So we get a draw. Okada retains the title. Post-match, Okada is in the back. Cody challenges for the title. More on that a little bit later. Kenny Omega, then, you know, it's on the floor, apologizing to Bullet Club for, you know, not being a good leader, not being able to win the title, says that he is going to go back, start from the bottom, and when he thinks he is ready, he will challenge Okada again for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. So now, Kenny Omega going back to the drawing board to figure out what he needs to do to get back into contention and to earn another title shot.
Well, part of the drawing board apparently is entering himself into the tournament to crown the first ever IWGP United States champion.
Yes, and we're going to get to it in a minute. Just very quickly, want to get through these results for Dominion. Just the title matches. Los Ingobernables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, and Sonata retained the never open weight 6-man tag titles in a gauntlet match.
Like I predicted.
The Young Bucks defeated Roppongi Vice to become the six-time IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champions. Guerrillas of Destiny defeated War Machine to win the IWGP Tag Team Championships. Kushida defeated Hiromu Takahashi to win back the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship.
That was the outcome I wanted, but not what I predict, not what I actually thought would happen.
Minoru Suzuki defeated Hirooki Goto in a lumberjack death match to retain the NEVER Openweight Championship.
Yet again, we both predicted Suzuki retaining there.
Tanahashi defeats Tetsuya Naito to win the IWGP Intercontinental Championship.
Thankfully for the safety of that championship, it won't get beaten and abused anymore for a little while. Tanahashi will take much better care of it than Naito did.
In non-title action, Cody defeats Michael Elgin. I will tell you, outside of Okada versus Omega, Tanahashi Naito was my second favorite match.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know at this point that you're a big fan of Naito. We know that you enjoy Tanahashi's work, and every time these guys have been together, they've also been able to put on some fantastic matches.
Okay, Okada Omega 2, where does it rank to you in as far as best matches you've ever watched?
Man, that's so hard. It's so hard to gauge. Like, sometimes my favorite match, like, I'm the same way with music. I'm the same way with movies. Sometimes my favorite matches and favorite moments and movies and music and all this, it fluctuates. It changes.
Is Okada Omega 2 in your top 10 of overall best matches you've seen? And not necessarily just the wrestling, but in all categories. It's a top 10 overall.
On the spot, without extensive deliberation, I could say yes. If I'm to sit here and rack my brain and say, well, no, what about this versus this and this versus this, it may or may not. But from having seen it fresh, you know, it's still being, there's still a whole lot of buzz around it. I could say that it could fit in that top 10 somewhere.
I look at some of my most memorable matches. I think HBK, Undertaker 1. Then I go to Steamboat, Randy Savage. Then I go back to Steamboat, Steve Austin, as some of the matches, just a couple of them. And then I go back to AJ Styles, John Cena last year.
Yeah.
You know, that right there is five. Then you add Okada Omega 2. I mean, it's definitely my top 10. It's going to be a memorable one, especially, you know, in this era.
Yeah, well, absolutely. In this era, I mean, 2017, we've seen a whole lot of great wrestling. There's been a whole lot of interesting and unusual things, and that seemed to kind of be a theme that came up in conversations a lot with friends and even discussions with wrestlers at the gaming expo where the AWE matches were at that we talked about. That seemed to be a kind of thing that I kept coming back to. Is 2017? It's been a great year of wrestling so far, and part of it is there's so many things that are happening that several years ago we would have said would never happen. And just, you know, I mean, not only the pushes, but placement of stars and caliber of matches, stars competing against each other we wouldn't think would compete. People doing maneuvers and personas that we didn't think that were going to happen, you know, and the independent level, new promotions, new stars finding new ground and getting places that they hadn't been before. You know, I mean, if you have any question about the caliber of stuff that we've seen in 2017, you know, I mean, you can obviously look at WWE. At some of their main event level stuff, things that we didn't think would happen, like we mentioned Jinder Mahal in January. Would anybody have been able to predict that Jinder Mahal would be the champion and he would defeat Randy Orton to get it, no less? On the indie level, look at the series of matches between Donovan Dijak and Keith Lee. that's really it. I mean, that's the thing you can look at and say, like, if this is the way wrestling is in 2017 and it's going into the future, like, we are at a wonderful time for professional wrestling as fans. You know, like, I have no understanding of how successful the business is, how it's doing monetarily. But as fans, there is so much great stuff happening, things that we didn't expect, we didn't think we'd see, things that we thought about seeing, but we didn't know that they would be as good as they actually were. It's just been a fantastic year. And we're barely halfway through it right now. There's still a whole lot more of 2017 to come. And it's one of these times where you're just like, man, wrestling is so good.
This is not me bragging, but in 2017 alone, I have watched in person and on iPay-per-views and on video on demand over 1,200 matches.
Goodness gracious. And like we said, halfway into the year.
So to think that, you know, I've seen that many matches and, you know, I'm not even going to try to rate all of the matches I've seen.
Well, I think that's it, though. I think that's also a testament to how 2017 is in wrestling, because you've sought out and watched that much. There's not just been a few shows here and there. You continue to seek out stuff, be it live, iPay-per-view. You know, you traveled across the country multiple times this year to seek out great wrestling, because great wrestling is in so many places. There's so many great stars, so many great companies, there's so much great talent, there's so many great matchups, you know, that you can just continue to go places. And there's probably a whole lot of great stuff out there that you still haven't seen yet, or that maybe you didn't watch the first go around, but you've seen highlights of, or you've seen a match a few months after it happened. You know, it's just, I mean, 2017 is a wonderful year of professional wrestling.
It's like we've been saying throughout this entire year, it's a great time to be a pro wrestling fan.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there is flavor for everybody. It's kind of like if you go to one of those yogurt places, frozen yogurt places, and you get to pick your flavor, and then you get to pick your toppings. And you know, that's where wrestling is right now. There's so much of it. You know, there's the Japanese style wrestling. You know, there's the UK indie scene that's blowing up. You know, then there's the American scene, sports entertainment. You know, there's the hardcore, you know, stuff that everybody loves. There's plenty of lucha to go around. There's so much different stuff out there that, you know, people, it's just the best time right now. If you're a wrestling fan, that you're in the best period right now, no matter how much you can complain about creative. Man, the fact that there's so much different things for you to watch, and we can just say that, hey, we probably just watch one of the greatest matches ever, but it's not over. There's still so much more. And not to everybody it's going to be the best match. To somebody else, a different match is going to be the best. But it's just great that we get to see all of this.
Yeah, there's, and like you said, there's so many different options. If you're upset about creative direction in any one company, be it WWE, be it any specific indie or a number of indies, that, you know, you don't, we have so many options that you don't have to be satisfied with mediocre. You can keep looking and you can find that one product or that one company that jumps out at you and makes you say, yes, I love professional wrestling.
With that, let's move on to the G1 specials in Long Beach. New Japan is coming to the U.S. because why not?
Yeah, why not? Japan could, Los Angeles could be the new Japan.
So here's what we got. Night 1 will be on July 1st, Night 2, July 2nd. Night 1, we're going to see Okada defending the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Cody. And we're going to see the Guerrillas of Destiny defend the IWGP Tag Team Championships against War Machine. And we're going to see also multi-man matches, Bullet Club versus Chaos, and Dragon Lee, Joshin, Thunder Liger, Titan, and Volador Jr. against Los Ingobernables de Japón. But then, and David Finlay, Tanahashi, Jay White, and Kushida versus Billy Gunn, Sho Tanaka, Komatsu, and Yoshitatsu. And then we have 8 men in the tournament for the IWGP United States Championship. Here are the brackets. On one side, Kenny Omega versus Michael Elgin. The winner of that match will face the winner of Jay Lethal versus Hangman Page. On the other side, Juice Robinson versus Zack Sabre Jr. The winner facing Naito versus Ishii. So the first round matches will be on July 1st. On the second night, Young Bucks defend the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against Roppongi Vice. Tanahashi defends the IWGP Intercontinental Championship against Billy Gunn. The winner of Omega Elgin versus the winner of Page and Lethal. The winner of Robinson Sabre Jr. versus the winner of Naito versus Ishii. And then the finals. We're not going to go through all this yet because, you know, we still got a few more weeks before the show. But can you pick a winner right now?
The thing I want to talk about is how we seem to discuss in the past over the last several weeks, actually in quite a decent length, about how we felt that this championship seemed tailor-made for Cody Rhodes. And we discussed how he would be a good candidate, somebody to help represent and lead your company professionally in the United States, and how he could take this belt around to all the different promotions it's going to and defend it and help bring attention to New Japan Pro Wrestling and present a good image, help add prestige to the belt by defending it across the country and all this. And Cody isn't even announced for the tournament. So I wanted to kind of make that was the first thing I thought of when I saw the brackets. Instead, it seems that he's taking the next step up. He's not even concerned with the United States Championship now. He's going for the top prize in Japan. He wants to be the one to take the IWGP Heavyweight Championship and take it across the United States and defend it and use that championship to raise prestige and awareness and interest from the United States into New Japan. I mean, it's a good strategy on his respect. I imagine that there's a whole lot more money that comes along to Cody being the IWGP champion than there would being the IWGP United States champion. As depending on your fandom, the IWGP, Heavyweight Championship, a lot of people see that as the top belt in the world. They don't see that as just the top belt in Japan. So I'm really excited to see what this match holds, what this show holds. But as far as picking somebody to win that tournament, I'm not really sure. From a political standpoint, it seems that it would be best to have somebody, an American wrestler who's based at least half their time in the United States as that person to hold that belt and take it around, as opposed to somebody like Naito who would just take it back to Japan and hold it there. As we've seen the brackets, I think I have to go with Michael Elgin. He's former Intercontinental Champion, former Ring of Honor World Champion. I think I have to go with Michael Elgin to win this tournament.
Right. Well, right now I am picking Zack Sabre Jr. So I did my own little prediction.
Okay. Suzuki Goon's own Zack Sabre Jr.
The only representative of Suzuki Gun that's going to be in Long Beach. So, yeah, that's my pick right now. But in a few weeks, when we go through the entire card again and make our predictions, we'll figure out who we think is going to win this whole thing. We may change our minds between now and then.
That's very true, yeah.
New Japan Pro Wrestling is coming to Long Beach, California, July 1st, July 2nd. July 1st will be available on Access TV for the Americans here in the United States. New Japan World everywhere else. And on Sunday, July the 2nd, it will be available only on New Japan World. So you make sure you subscribe to that. If you don't have Access TV, contact your cable provider. Find out if you can get it. Jim Ross and Josh Barnett will be the commentating team for the Long Beach shows, which I am very happy about. So they're actually going to be calling the Dominion matches the week leading to the Long Beach show. So they'll be basically on track with the shows. So that'd be cool. Anybody wants to get a chance to watch Okada versus Omega and with Jim Ross on commentary, there you go. Yet another treat.
Yet another treat indeed.
Before we close it out, I just have one thing to say. What is going on with Hideo Itami? The boy looks like he's getting an attitude adjustment.
It looks like he's letting frustration build. I think that he seemed to feel that, you know, at TakeOver against Robert Roode was his moment and his time to realize what he thought was his full potential within NXT, as it's been a very rocky road for him, his time in NXT. He's pretty much had more downs than ups in his time in NXT, with his injuries, and just stopping and starting and stopping and starting because of those injuries. He finally got the top level going toward the top. He seemed to have the stars were beginning to align for Hideo Itami, and Robert Roode was able to defeat Hideo Itami. So we could visibly see the frustration at him after that match. He was in the locker room throwing stuff around. Cassius Ohno tried to kind of help calm him down, as I guess he and Ohno have maybe known each other for several years, and Hideo Itami wasn't having any of it. I think Hideo Itami starting to realize in his mind, like, playing the nice guy isn't going to work for him. It never worked for him in Japan. Not that he wasn't a nice guy. He fought honorably, but he fought very violently, without care for his opponent's well-being, without care for his own well-being. I think he realizes he might have to go back to that kind of mindset, to that kind of mentality, that he's not there to make friends, he's there to win matches. He wants to win them honorably, he wanted to win them abiding by the rules, but he wanted to win them completely and definitively. And so I think frustration's building, he's thinking in his mind that he might have to go back to that very violent, very kind of dark place almost, in order to achieve what he wants to achieve within NXT.
Yeah, and now there's also rumors that his contract is coming up and he may leave. I don't know, but first of all, before I get your thoughts on that, I want to say I like a heel Hideo Itami, if that's where they're going with this, because, you know, you already have the babyface Nakamura. I think that Hideo Itami can, you know, could benefit from being a heel if he does stay and moves on to the to the main roster. Now, what do you make of him possibly leaving after his contract ends?
I don't know if he... I mean, he could do that. He could try to play the American independent game. He could try going back to Japan. But I think despite all the trials and tribulations he's had, I think overall he's been happy with, at least from my understanding, with his experience within WWE. So I think if they present the correct deal, he'll stay. I think he wants to stay. He's just frustrated that his journey hasn't gone the way that he had hoped. I assumed when he signed, you know, initially, he thought that he would be up on the main roster at this point, you know, where guys who came in with him or came in around the same time as him are all on the main roster fighting or winning top level championships in the WWE. And because of his injuries, because of his setbacks, he's still having difficulty keeping momentum going in NXT. And he thought, okay, once I finally get my shot at the championship, I'm going to get it. And he wasn't able to. I think probably in his mind, you know, he probably feels he has a lot more to prove to the American fans and a lot more to prove to World Wrestling Entertainment that they weren't wrong when they signed him to the deal in the first place. So I think if they do present a correct deal, a fair deal, he'll be more than willing to stay.
And I definitely want to see him actually get a shot at the main roster. I wanted him to be healthy and thrive. I think that he could do very well.
Absolutely. We've seen the caliber of stuff he's able to do when he's healthy. We've seen him in Ring of Honor. We've seen him in Japan. We know what the man is capable of. It's just this stall and start with him in NXT. I can only imagine how frustrating it is for a professional to have been there for several years and not really been at the top of his game for more than a couple months, you know, like total for that time.
So I hope things work out with Hideo Itami and let's see where it goes. He needs to be healthy. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
And he looks like he is. And, yeah, you know, if he can just go ahead and get through this program he's on right now, continue to be healthy, who knows? He should get the chance to go up. A lot can happen between now and then. Let's just hope that he can be happy doing what he's doing and that he can see before he decides anything to give the main roster a chance. Now, I hope that also WWE doesn't see him as a liability and gives him that chance as well.
Yeah, that they don't see him as injury prone or you know, maybe he'll hurt somebody else or something. Yeah. Hopefully they're willing to give him, you know, and just realize that what's happened, they've essentially been freak accidents. It's been for him, sadly, it's been several of them.
So I hope you enjoyed the show. Subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Android devices. Please give us a rate and review. We'd definitely love to hear your feedback on the show. Follow at WrestleWords. Go to WrestlingWithWords.com for all of the podcasts and all the great articles and reviews. Check us out on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.